Alcoholics Anonymous is a bar of girls who come from somewhere, to share their faith, hope, and experiences, fellowship on every meeting. And that's the subject of open air meeting my life is a place here tonight. Our speaker tonight is William G. I had the pleasure of meeting him this morning, sharing a few brief moments with him, and I've had the pleasure again of sharing with him this evening in the committee room. I'd like now for you to meet and greet Bill G. and Kate Coral Ford, and I'm sure he's got a tremendous second chance.
Distinguished guests on the terrace, reverend fathers, boys and girls. My God, what a healthy looking bunch. You know, I have never seen such a well-fed bunch in my entire years in all years. And it does my heart good to see that we're all doing so well during such a trying time. I'd like to paint you a few word pictures, if I may, about Bill G., the alcoholic. And let me see, they gave me 2 hours. Well, I usually take longer than that. Isn't that a nice start? How are you going to get out? But tonight I'll confine my remarks to Bill G., the alcoholic, and then I'd like to tell you a little bit about the romance of recovery in AA. Anything that I might say during the course of my allotted time is just my opinion. It doesn't reflect AA as a whole or this glorious convention or anybody individually. It's just the way AA affects me. I like to remember the halcyon days of my youth. I had a very attentive memory. I like to remember Saturday night somehow. You know, Saturday night when I was a boy, my God, that is a long time ago, it was a big night in our town. I used to have 1, maybe 2. Oh, I was a tremendous success. Everybody loved me, and I loved everyone. And I'd look in the mirror, and I'd say, "Oh, Bill, you're a dork." Isn't that a terrible way to begin life as a young drinker? And a little bit at a time, it seems, I had a little drink on Friday night. Not many. You see, I never drank much. Just a little bit at a time. I'd have 1, I'd have 2, I'd have 3. And I remember Thursday. Why do I remember Thursday? I'll tell you why. I've been in the retail furniture business for over 50 years. And Thursday business is always bad. Consequently, we had 1 or 2 Thursdays to control ourselves. And Wednesday, as I recall, this guy's going to go on all night. He'll never get to it. We had such a tremendous day that we had 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 to celebrate. And believe it or not, I woke up one morning and discovered I'm drinking all the time. Now, what causes this? I'm selfish. Well, I'm selfish. I never drank much. I had a partner in those early years when I was 18. A Jewish guy. I'm an Irishman. My mother's a Limerick woman. Born and raised in Limerick City. I was talking to that fellow here that knew the potters there. See, a courier drives the bus to the airport. The potter tavern is still there. So you see, I had a reason to drink a little bit at a time. And this fellow, this partner of mine, didn't drink at all. But he didn't object because we managed to make money. And money seems to be the thing, then as now. The bottom line is what we pay off on. He would look astonished and mumble under his breath, and I'd say, "Bernie, are you bothered?" As business picked up, my drinking picked up. I became more two-fisted in my approach to alcohol. I woke up one morning and discovered I was married to a miserable woman. Why don't you be a man and drink like Charlie? Do you know Charlie? I know Charlie. He's the fellow that says, "Why don't you and Wilma come over tonight and we'll have a rubber at bridge?" Auction bridge in those years, you know. A more stupid game was never concluded. And I would beg off and say, "No." We said, "It's all arranged." We would ride at Charlie's nine-ish. The table was set, the cards were laid out. There on the table sat a moldy martini. Circa 1920, 21, 22. Be very careful with it because that's the only one you get that night. I avoided that bum with the tenacity of a bulldog. My drinking is now stepped up in tempo. We bought the building. We expanded. I began to admire myself even more in the mirror. How could such a lovely creature not be so? Happy job. God's gift to the furniture business. I am now taking in those years, I don't see anybody out here old enough to remember this brand. I used to drink all over holes, bonded rye. And I brought a pint into the store in the morning to put in my desk in case someone fell down. My partner looked at me and he became very suspicious of me. And about this time I had discovered he had a little habit unbeknown to me. He played the horse. Now can you conceive a combination such as that? A drinking Irishman, a Jewish horse player? How in heaven's name we made any money, I don't know. He had something open on his desk this morning called a scratch sheet. Lines of figures and fractions and multiplications. What is this thing here? Why, he said, "I'm figuring out a four-horse parlay." In all the years that I knew him, he never cashed a bet. I became equally suspicious of him. I wasn't having much fun because it seems at about this time, I'd only been drinking a few short years, I developed a nasty little habit. It seemed to me that I had to throw up in the morning. Does that ring a bell anywhere around here? until this time I ran into a bartender, a friend of mine. God rest his soul. He said, Bill, what's your trouble? I said, Harry, I'm as sick as a dog. Well, he said, you're not shaking. I said, no, but I shake inside. Well, he said, you poor kid. Baby boy, let me fix you something. This is his panacea. The drop of a vitamin A, a jiggle of gin, a dash of orange bitters. Voila. I said, make me one. He said, I will. Oh, I said, hurry. He said, I am. I had one. I had two. I had three. How right he was. I floated into the store at 11 that morning. Where have you been? I said, don't bother me, boy. My partner and I entered the disenchantment stage. My wife, she's killing me. My children ignore me. I'm a pariah in my own house. You're hiding the stuff, I say. She said, I'm not hiding it. I said, what is it doing in the bathtub? But I said, the noses are up on legs, you know. She put it under the stuff. She's because you're drinking too darn much. She's you're going to throw away everything you've worked for. You're working 20 hours a day. Have you no brains? I said, madam, you nauseate me. Do I touch anybody here? A fellow told me this afternoon he was thinking of moving 500 miles away, where no one knows him. I thought of that. And I put the action to the thought. I silently and secretly, unbeknownst to my family, liquidated our business. I didn't tell my child bride that I was leaving. I loaded up the back of my Kissel Speedster. Anybody remember that boat? And off I go 500 miles away. Now, you folks that are thinking about making such a move, may I offer a word of caution? The same bunch that thinks that you're a dirty, stinking, drunken bum right here in London, you get up around Montreal someplace, and the same guy's waiting for you. He may speak French, but he's right there waiting for you. I thought I would go west. I managed to get a cabin every night. They didn't have motels in those years. They had cabins. They were $1 a night. And I always insisted on a cabin with twin beds. One to sleep in and one to throw up in. See, I was the high type. You don't need a formal education to drink like that. I ended up in Seattle, Washington. Opened up a furniture store. But it seems that my drinking is interfering with my working. I'm buying and selling furniture before any of it's paid for. Very serious business. I mean, the law frowns on this practice. To make a long story even longer, in 20 months, I was a bankrupt. And all of Daddy's money went down the drain, too. As soon as I went broke, I thought of my dear wife. I knew she needed me. I sent her a telegram, collect. She wouldn't pay for it. I began the long trek back to New Jersey, which is my home state. I went to the way of San Diego. It took me 9 months to get back to New York. En route, I had a discussion with a couple of greyhounds. I arrived in a thin Oldsmobile. No baggage, no clothes, no radio in the car, no spare tire, no jack, just a thin Oldsmobile, for which I received a magnificent sum of $50, which I promptly spent on booze. I wondered what was going to become of me. I couldn't go home. I called. I'm sorry, but this line has been disconnected. I was concerned. I ended up in a place called Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park, for the uninitiated, was the south end of the northbound horse. I sold my good suit that I was wearing, and in return I received a pair of blue dungarees with very little fanny in them, and a blue shirt. And I went back to Lincoln Park to polish off the suit. And I see all these fellows lying there in the grass in various stages of inebriation. And I knew I was home. It seems there's more bums congregated there than anywhere else. Incidentally, I'm not suggesting that you descend to this strata of society before you grasp AA. But sure as God made little apples on big trees, if you don't do something about your drinking, you'll end up there. And I feel sorry for old Bill. And it's November, and I'm cold. And I'm sitting there on this bench crying softly to myself. And along comes another bum. Hello, Slim. Hello. It's the first guy I've spoken to me in 3 weeks. There, he says, that's a nice pair of shoes you're wearing there. Now, there's a fella that knew class when he saw it. I warmed up to him right away. I told him those were Stacy Adams. I don't care where you stole them. He said, they're from me. He let Stacy buy another. He said, I know where we can get 75 cents for those shoes. Is that so? I said, yes. Let's go. We go about 6 or 8 blocks away, and we came to a place called Cheap Charlie's.
prophet.
Your name? And sure enough, he gave me 75 cents for the shoes, and because it was cold and beginning to snow, he gave me a pair of canvas relievers. I mean, this kid was all heart. Right next door to Chief Charlie, there happened to be a general. Sheer coincidence, I'm sure. And what do you think they had on sale that day? Two bottles of muscatel that had never seen a grape, believe you me, dear. For how much? 75 cents. What a stroke of luck. Right next to the general is a convenient alley, and me being the host, I offered my new found. We uncorked the jug. He took a big drink, and he put his arms around me. I took a big drink, and I put my arms around me. And I want to tell you, boys and girls, there's no love like one drunken bum for another. Back to the park we go. He's telling me of his vast conquest in the field of chemistry. I was amazed. In turn, I told him of my training in French shorts. Not existent, of course. I was designing a new trunk for my latest venture. I turned around for his approval. The bum is gone! He took the full bottle with him! Now I'm not only broke and sick, but I'm barefooted. What does one do then? Along comes another bum. Again, I repeat, in that strata of society, there's no shortage of companionship. See, the fakehead, if you and I go down and see Sally. I don't know the lady. I have no money. I mean, no, he's fighting the Salvation Army. I what for? All I ever do is come around the house and collect stuff. But listen, it's snowing and we're going to get pneumonia staying out here. Let's get in out of the weather. Says, in your condition, they've got to give us a place to sleep. By golly, he knew what he was talking about. Fella looked us all over. He says, where's your shoes, fella? And somebody stole them. So what are you trying for? I said, I'm cold. He says, you're dirty, too. You stink, both of you. I'm sorry, Commander. No, he said, I'm not the commander. I'm the night clerk. I said, all right, Sergeant. I want to get in somehow. He said, well, you better take a shower first. He gave us a piece of burlap. Brown burlap bag. Never seen the soft soap you girls used. And he broke a cake of yellow soap. I don't see anybody here that would remember this old yellow soap. Old Fell's knapsack. It literally would take the eye off an ox. And he ushered us into this dank, damp shower room. Now scrub up and snap it up. Very gingerly, I tossed a little water here and there. Out we go into the, well, it was a room a third the size of this. And he gave us a blanket. It looked like a horse blanket to me. And he opened this door, and there's 200 men in there sleeping on these old Helen Gould cots, these World War I Army cots. Now he says, get into that kit and dummy up. I didn't understand his lingo at the time, but I learned it. And we got in there. I knew I would not live through the night. The rumblings and rantings and roarings that were going on around me would drive a monk up the wall. I must have fallen asleep. I hear a shrill whistle and a bell rings, and this voice says, "Edward Tubby, up." They had a big clock on the wall that said 5 a.m. "What for? It's dark out," he said. "Shut up. Are you the two new fish that came in last night?" He looked me up and down. He said, "Do you want to work?" Well, I said, "I'm not a well man." I looked on his cap that said "Envoy." I said, "Envoy, sir, I'm not a well man." Well, he said, "Then get out." I walked over to the window and I looked out. The snow outside was hip deep to a tall Indian. I hastily reconsidered. I said, "Does this job pay any money, Andre, sir?" He says, "Yes. Rather magnificent sum. First week, 95 cents. And of course, your room and board." "Well," I said, "I'll take it, but I don't have any shoes. I'll get you a pair." I wore 9s. He gave me 11s. He put paper in the toes. He introduced me to the mystery of the bailing. A bailing room is a room the size of this. And in the center of the room stood this huge steel press, surrounded by acres and acres and acres of newsprint. It was a very difficult job. You had to bend over and pick the paper up and put it in this giant thing. And after it was all piled up, a fellow came over and wrapped some wire around it, stepped on a treadle that disgorged this mass, and you began all over again. Now, let me tell you something about the alcoholic in the stages of recovery. I bailed more paper there than the records are there to show that has ever been bailed before or since, and right away I'm looking for a promotion. I said, "Say, Envoy, don't you have a better job around here for bad boys?" "Well," he said, "this was Friday. They paid there on Friday. Did you show up Monday and we'll see?" See, Friday is the kickoff day in Salvation Army. They all take their money and go out and get drunk, and then a new batch comes in Sunday, and so Monday I'm right on the job. "Here I am, sir." "Well," he said, "I'm glad to see that, Bill, old boy. I'm going to put you out on the truck as a helper. $3 a week, 2 bologna sandwiches, a cold container of coffee." "Well, things are looking up, so." And that Monday, we went out into the hinterlands, into the Orange Room, into the Caldwell. And all that week, I'm running in and out of the yard, and my little skinny legs and the dogs are snapping at my delicate fanny. And I'm watching the fellow that drives this thing. And I come out with a beautiful coat, and the fellow says, the driver says, "I'll take that right up here, Bill." And he says, "Oh, yes, it's pretty good." Oh, well, the light is beginning to go. Friday night, I took my $3, I buddied up to him, I took the driver out and got him drunk. Monday, I got his job. After all, I was the executive type. $5 a week. They took me out of the big dormitory and they put me in a tiny little room. I had absolute privacy. I was only 6. They gave me a cap that said chauffeur on it. No one would have known. And so Monday, here's old Bill out behind the old rig. One of the boys came out, I'll never forget this, believe me, with a size 46. Still got a green stick. And I looked at the label, it said 53. I said, "I'll take it up here, sir." I was a very modest 38. I could hardly contain myself until I got back to my room to try on this suit. The trousers came up to here. The cuffs came down to here. girl, I thought, with a little fiction.
How stupid can get one get?
Friday night came. I grabbed my $5. I got in my big suit. And I went out and got drunk and they threw me out of there. I couldn't stand for that.
Funny, you say? Tragedy, then it's worse than most things. Tragedy to the institute. Because here began the degradation of building. I became a bum literally, physically, spiritually, morally, and every other way. I go from store to store and bum nickels and dimes. When I got so filthy I couldn't go in the stores anymore, I'd stand at the bus stop with two pennies in my hand and I'd pay the old lady. My mother, she's just ready to pass on since my thing. Give me a penny case so that I can get to see her, the dear soul, before she departs. When you got five pennies together, you were the fifth of a cheap mix. I don't know how many of you have had to drink denatured alcohol to get a job. I don't know how many of you have mixed it up with water and shake it up until it looks like milk. And we're sitting in the park, shaking it up, and the old lady comes by and says, "Oh, good for us. Drinking your milk. Here's a quarter, go get another pot." And a quart can lay out five guys for 48 hours. And if you wake up in the morning and one of them happens to be cold and stiff, the first law of the jungle is, take his shoes. Is this the way for a human being to live, that our blessed Lord is endowed with life and breath to live and breathe? Is this the way a normal person be asked when he's faced with such adversity?
Oh, I was a dirty, filthy, slimy thing that crept out from under a flat rock just to get a brief glimpse of sunlight and then back in. I made the rounds of the hospitals. I discovered that formaldehyde was better than blue, more potent. And if you didn't make the rounds too often, as the fellow said, "William, my lad, you've got to become a circle bound. Nobody will get the new express. You become a circle bound, and you learn to talk the way they talk in the jungle. And you go from Newark to Patterson, to Hackensack, to Little Ferry, to Jersey City, and then the big jump across the meadows, and it takes about 30 days to make the first. And this particular time, as I recall, I landed up in Jersey City in the medical center. It was a brand new building then. And I was under what is charitably called restraining sheets. That's a fancy name for a straitjacket. You had to give your next of kin to get in. And they called up my little darling. And I think she came down to identify the body. Hopefully, I'm sure. And you know, God in his infinite wisdom did something exceptionally fine and good when he gave a gal like mine to a bum like me. She came down, no harsh words. "Hello, Bill."
"No, they robbed me. I've been a bad boy." I said, "This big fella, he means to me."
He said, "If you want to shut your big mouth, I'm going to put this drag right back in there." They had a a rubber truncheon sort of a thing with a strap on the end of it, about 6 inches long and about 3 inches around, and they'd grab you by the nostrils, and you'd open your mouth for air, and you'd jam it down in there and tie it behind your head. If you didn't swallow your tongue, you'd survive. If you didn't survive, turn up and
come here, then. Come here, come here, come here.
Don't get smart. I said, look, Joe, I want to see Lucy, too. He said, you always wear a beard? I know. They took me into a little office. Here stepped in a neat little man. Guy so tall he couldn't have weighed 80 pounds. I said, you're Louis? He said, yeah. I said, by God, you needed them. Oh, this was the wrong thing to say. Oh, this was dynamite. I lit the fuse right there. Charlie grabbed me to the front of the shed and said, you big dumb, you're not funny. I ought to belt you. Well, I feared for the safety of the old girl party. I said, look, I'm sorry. I apologize. I said, look, Lou, old friend, just give me the pills. I'm not dressed for this. I said, I am. But did you, the fellow with the pills, won't be here tonight. Take him in and give him some coffee. In we go. Meet Harry. Oh, Harry's wife. Oh, I was really big on my wife. Shut up. How's my wife? Shut up. I want you to meet Al. He's a beautiful. Oh, my God. Don't say another word or I'll let you. Drink the coffee. A.A. Crawford in those years has left something to be desired. It was bitter. But hot. Drink it. Fellas, I'd like to tell you a little. Don't say a word. Listen, you dummy. I said, the bell rings. I think the joint's on fire. I leap from the shoe. Oh, shut up. The romance of recovery, you know. There's a meeting starting upstairs. Oh, I said, for me. He said, no, just the regular Sunday night meeting if you're going. Charlie on one side and Joe on the other. The way they hung on to me, I must have been the only schnook they hadn't had during the year. And in those years, they didn't trust us too much. This is what took like. The girls were on one side and the fellows were on the other. We're right up in the second row front. Joe's here, old dad is here, and his son. I look over at my dad and I wave. She looks over at me and she waves back. I guess the girls have told her a few things during that. Nothing very complimentary to the great man himself. I said, beware, Joe, if it gave me you have to win. But I don't smile. 60,000 people in there at this time. I'm between the only two stiffs that don't use cigarettes. God, I felt sorry for me. And I looked on the floor, and there was a big, long spot. I'm surprised.
I gently, with my toe, ease it towards you. I reached down very cautiously to pick it up, and Charlie stepped on my hand. But we don't do those kind of things in here, do we? One more stunt like that, he says, I'm going to duck you right in the mouth. I said, I'm sorry. Shut up. I'll never forget this meeting if I live to be a thousand. And I have every intention of doing it. In those years, I had a leader. They had speaker number one, speaker number two, and the big gem of the night, speaker number three. But if I didn't know it, huh? And they called on the first speaker. This guy who took us all the way back to the Boer War. He took us right up to the White Coast of Dover. I said, will you tell me what this has got to do with me? And he give me a belt, my ribs, and says, yes. He talked for an hour. Because the meeting started at 8 o'clock and went on and on and on ad infinitum. I turned to Joe. I said, Joe, I have to go. He said, you'll have to go here. Yep. Right there. I said, Joe, can you give me a drag on the pipe at least? I'll give you a punch in the mouth. I didn't care for him at all. The romance of this country. They called on the second speaker, a tiny little man. He had a tiny little wife and three tiny kids. He told the most poignant story out of the head my entire lifetime. It seems it was Thanksgiving time. He just purchased a new electric range for his wife. Thanksgiving dinner was simmering on the wheel of the ranch. One of his cronies went around the front and rang the bell. And when his little darling went to answer the front door, he and three other guys took cold dinner and all right out the back door. I like that fellow. I told him my dad and I said, I'm not going to do anything like that, man. We never had a soul that was worth it. They passed the basket. I had nothing that remotely resembled money. I go, what is all this doing? Shut up. I was going to see three bucks in there. Ooh, I wanted to get my hands on it. Then they called on what turned out to be the final speaker of the evening. A man by the name of Stoner, that was his nickname. God rest his soul, he did much. Stoner had a penchant for diamonds and like no other man in this entire world. He had a diamond horseshoe on his shirt front, no tie, but a diamond horseshoe. He had a 4-carat pinky ring on his finger that he blew on constantly. He admired his great length. He had a Ronson cigarette lighter that was diamond studded. He had 5 1-carat stones embedded in the side. And he stopped it. And he flipped in this lighter and he's looking right at me. He said, if you're sick and dirt and don't have a job tonight, throw that about it. If I'd have had a gun, I'd have shot him right between the eyes. Finally, the meeting was over. They took me downstairs and I threw up all that coffee. Fellas, I'll see you next week. No, come back up and meet the speakers. Yes, is there not yet? No, I don't wear a beard. My wife is. No, I don't wear a beard. My first meet, yes. Did you care for a turn of face change? Ma! Ma! Yes. Thank you, Harold. Harold said to my wife, don't let him smoke one's job. Oh, Lord. Yes, ma'am. Yes, it's very nice. Give him the pamphlet. Sign the book of those years with Fleet Island. Make him leave it tonight. I can barely walk and they want me to read a book. Tom says, don't worry, kid, you'll make it. And he went out and got in his Cadillac and went that way. Tony said, boy, I expect a lot out of you. Seriously. He went out and got in another Cadillac and went the other way. Funny, isn't it, huh? Tragedy! My little darling and I, with the pamphlets in the book, we went out and got on the bus and went the other way. I had one lucid thought. God in his wisdom let me return to the red. Let me get in that house and get back on that red. We get in the house and I took off my jacket. Put that jacket on. I said, for? We're home now. Makes no difference. I said, what are you going to do, dear? Just what the girls told me to do. Make a nice pot of coffee. All night long, I sat there. I'm reading a little, I'm drinking a little, and I puke a lot. I'll tell you that right now. Not very nice words to use at the convention, but that's the truth of the matter. Dawn broke. I'm still sitting there, yet. I want you going to work. A few minutes. Think more about it. I said, "Don't smoke. Cigarette. Don't smoke. Why not? Carol said it forms gas on your stomach." I said, "Carol's an idiot. Did you want to go outside?" Uh-huh. 10 o'clock in the morning, here they come. Has he been mean to you, little lady? What are you doubling up your chest for? Because if you talk too much, I'm going to bust you. And No, she said my husband has never struck me in all the years of marriage. I thank you, Mother. John? Joe? Who's the other idiot there? Get out of bed with her, that G.D. did, and drag you outside. He said, my name is Cliff. Well, I said, I don't care for you, Cliff, either. He's going, no, there. We're not too happy with you. Back to the club we go. The next day, here they come again. And the next day, here they come again. I don't think that is worse. My wife says, why don't you shut up and listen to him? Charlie says, now you're getting the idea, honey. We'll trim this bird down to size here. 10 days passed. I recognized food for the first time. We're able and permitted, I might add, to go to the club every night. And a set it. Yes, my darling, and me. The romance of recovery in a year. I'm able to bathe unassisted. I removed the bed. All by myself. I put on my shirt with the right side to the front. I said to my darling, look, Ma. She said, you're magnificent, Papa. I said, not everybody has to come to do this. Hello, Charlie. Am I ever get a job? I'll buy you a pipe. Oh, I'm thinking of a job, Bill. Are you going to let this lady carry hash the rest of her life down there? 30 days have passed. Papa, do you think I'm ready? Because you're as ready as you're ever going to be, now that I have to get a job. I got a job working for a fella that one time had worked for me. A nice man. A nice man. I got another suit. The coat matched the pants. In those days, that was important. Now, if it matches the pants, but me. I paid the rent on the apartment, $42 a month. Well, what do you think, kid? Pretty well, huh? How do you think I look? You look all right. Yeah. I don't know. You're looking well. But just be calm. I said, no. No, I've got to get into action. My hero is killing me. I'm a slice of building stairs. And to think how privileged I would become some 12, 13 years later to have Bill W. ask me to put my story in the big book. Oh, she said, come off this job, Bill. I mean, come on. Now, you're doing well. And I became active. Oh, so active. Only my darling can tell you. The drunks in the bathtub. Drunks under the rug. Drunks in the bedroom. My daughter had to move out. I'm sober now. Thank you.
Wendy, why don't you form a little group down there where you live?
And so we did. There were seven of us. And we formed the Clinton Hill Group in 1940. And two of them went out and got drunk. We got four more. And three of them got drunk. And at the end of 3 months, we had 15 members. And they gave us a little pin at the end of the 3 month period back home. And I was waiting for the 3 month period. I could hardly contain myself. I had a 2,000-word script in my pocket. And we went to the meeting. You think they'll really give me the pen tonight? He said, they just get it on there. It's been only 3 months. I don't know where it is. You've been working hard.
What a wife I have, huh?
I presented me with a pen and they said, Bill, say a few words. I said, I'm an alcoholic and thank you very much. The applause was tremendous. I have since found out it was because I was so brief. I see by my watch it won't happen to me tonight. 6 months goes around. You get a second-hand car. I get a piece of jewelry out of home. We speak to a few meetings out in the hinterland. In those days, you take two or three guys with you. And you'd be two or three guys out there, and you'd have a go. And then something happened. I enjoyed the sound of the green cone. We didn't walk into the club anymore, we slept. I developed a little coterie of applause. I learned to set way in advance. So I could make an instructive dumping when they asked me. We went into the club this Sunday night, and the late jackass said to me, Bill, Tom didn't show up tonight. Would you mind filling in for him? He said, by God, I hate that. And I know now that he did. And I said, what do you say there? I said, of course, old chap. I was the same dirty, stinking slob I've been for 25 years. The only difference was I was sober now. I was dry as dust and just as different. The only thing I had developed was a callus on my fanny from sitting on those chairs. I knew more and more about less all the time. And they called on the first teacher. It wasn't me. I said, do you think they're saving me? I learned the most important lesson I've ever learned. They called on the second teacher. Wasn't he me? And then Stanley spoke, and the meeting was over. I brought my heart to the party, and no one asked me to play. What happened? Nothing happened, Dad. They didn't need you tonight.
Oh, Dad, that's true.
AA doesn't need to be. I need you boys and girls.
I need you desperately, honestly, devotedly, sincerely, and I love every one of you. And I went back to the little group, and I learned that someone has to fold the chair. Someone has to wash the ice tray. I thought the bee did it. My little darling in the kitchen, for 15 solid years, she made coffee and washed the dishes. And then I began to do it. Not all at once, just a little bit at a time. We stopped the mad rush. We stopped the running to a degree. And I learned to listen for the first time in many years. And you boys and girls taught me many things. And you taught me many things. He taught me, for the needs of tomorrow, I need not pray. Help me, keep me, love me, Lord, just as it is. You boys and girls taught me, living is giving. Giving is loving, and loving is God. I worried about God. I didn't get anything from going to the mall. My wife spoke to the late Monsignor McNulty about it. He said, don't worry, dear. One day he will develop an awareness of God. Some 5 years passed in rapid succession. And the only thing I remember the first 5 years was my first anniversary when they forgot the church. Gratitude is the dream. I was really sick. And my wife said, why don't you be grateful for your years to God? As I was grateful then, so am I grateful now. We were still in the basement apartment. And right outside of our bedroom window, there was a 3-foot stunted oak with one branch that protruded it right under. And this particular morning when I woke, do you know what I saw? One of the tiniest of God's feathered creatures sitting on that branch. You know what he was doing? He was sitting down. He dipped his beak under his wings and ruffled his tiny body, and it caused the branch to rise and fall. An awareness of God. God made the bird and the little tree upon which it sat. And he made this all for me. I've never seen a bird take a bath before. I've spent 25 years in the bottom of a drowned bottle. I'm aware of God. I too learned to pray. Can you pray, little prayer, thank God for a lovely day. And then one day I was privileged to go out and tell the story of AA to somebody that needs it very badly. And you bring him into meetings, and you take him around, and you watch him grow big and strong like a green bay tree. You don't have to worry about God anymore. He's sitting right in front of your eyes. Quiet sometimes. Thanks for having me.
And surely you will meet some of us as you tread the happy road of destiny. Surely, my friends, we're at that point in here tonight. I'm not going to attempt to thank you all for that message.
So we have someone better than us. But I would ask Greg to thank him on your behalf. Greg, please.
Hi, I'm Fred. I'm just delighted to be up here this evening. I'm very nervous. After hearing this speaker of the evening, I have a kind of talk memorized, but I don't think it will do me justice to vote with the things I've been thinking now for the last couple of weeks. The convention committee decided that I was a candidate that could do this job, and so they asked me if I would do it. Well, I'm grateful that I was asked. I'm proud that I was asked. And I know that you all here got the message that our speaker of the evening was trying to give. He was telling you about this program, what this program is, how this program works. He was trying to get senior to you, the rock upon which this program is built. And he was told of him out, he brought out the spiritual aspect of this program, which is a very, very foundation of life itself. He didn't speak very long about God as we understand him. But he spoke enough to let you know in no uncertain terms the reason why you were here tonight. We hear many speakers as we keep going to these meetings. Over the years that I am able to look back on them in the lane, I look back with fondness upon the old time that was here when I came. There are some in this room. My sponsors here for me. And I think back at that. The effort, the things they did to try and help a new man to understand what this program is all about. We laughed a lot tonight listening to Bill. Bill made us laugh. But my God, the heartache and the fear and the anguish and the torture that we alcoholics will see. And the wonderful thing it is to be able to come to these meetings and find out that we don't have to stay down in the mud. That isn't where we were meant to be. This program works. It will give us half a chance. Some people think, like I have in the past, that after you've been around the program a while, you really know what it's about. You don't have to delve in it too deeply. You don't have to commit yourself too deeply. Our speaker tonight will let you know that you need to know more. So that's the learning. As we go from one school to another, sharing different speakers, each one qualified in a different way to pass the message on. Like going to a school, you go from public to high school, and you hear trained people, knowledgeable people that know what they're talking about when you go to university and college. And it intrigues you, it excites you, because you know that this program is built on truth and love for one another. And you sense the importance of trying to develop an awareness of what your higher power means to you, awareness of what God is for you. Our speaker this night kept us entertained well. He made us laugh, but at the same time, he so easily understood the terrible, torturous path that he trod before finding AA. We're very fortunate tonight to have a man of his ability to come here, of his great knowledge and experience, is able to come here and share with us what he knows to be true. And I would like to ask you on behalf of the conference committee and everyone present, I would like you to give your professor a real party, Western Ontario's man.